It is a longtime fact of life in our region that people grow marijuana here because it grows well and there's a lot of remote land people do not visit very often. Illegal pot growing operations, we're not talking medical marijuana here, continue to keep police busy. And there's an environmental impact as well. Water withdrawn, pollutants introduced in the service of growing marijuana. The issue had grown acute on Yurok tribal lands recently in Northern California, so the tribe brought in some help and raided a number of illegal grows a few weeks ago. Leonard Mastin is the public safety chief for the Yurok tribe and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Leonard, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So first, the basic scene. I mean, is there any marijuana grown on Yurok lands legally?
Actually, no. The tribe has adopted a zero-tolerance ordinance, so even if you have the in California, the 215 medical marijuana cards, it does not work on the reservation.
All right, so nothing basically legally then grown on the reservation?
No.
All right. Have the illegal grow sites always been an issue? I mean, basically for a long time now?
They've been, clear back into the early 70s when I worked for the Humboldt County Sheriff's Department. There had been, a few handful of people that grew up and down the river. A little bit about the Yurok Reservation, it's about 42 miles long, and a mile on each side is the ancestral boundaries of the reservation. So there was a handful of people, but last year we flew over the reservation for a marijuana operation because the tribe was noticing a significant amount of water that was being siphoned off the creeks and drainages in the upper portion of the reservation up there. So anyway, we flew over and we served like 9 warrants last year, and then this year in early spring flying, we noticed a significant amount of gardens that were basically tripled from last year. So we had taken a little more drastic route and looking for assistance because there's no way that our department consists of 9 people and we don't really have the capabilities of dealing with the large marijuana grows on the reservation. So we kind of went through the National Guard through, we had a drought conference call one day, and in the governor's report was that they were thinking about using National Guard. They used to use National Guard all the time, and then they kind of went away for 7 or 8 years, and nobody used them, and now they're coming back, and they're a significant help with manpower and equipment and removing those gardens. So through them, we came up with a huge effort from other agencies. We had in excess of 12 different agencies, a couple different SWAT teams from the Humboldt County and one of our local prisons, Pelican Bay SWAT team. And so it consisted of almost 70 officers throughout the state. So that it was very significant, and we were able to do a lot of work in a short time.
That's a big difference from the 9 guys in your own force to 70 at one time.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a huge effort, and we served, I believe, 43 different search warrants throughout the community, the upper parts of the reservation, probably maybe 15 miles of the upper part, which is the concentration of a lot of the grows in those areas are all behind lock gates and that type of stuff. So it took a huge effort in not only removing those, but just getting around in those areas through the lock gates and those types of things. It was a huge undertaking of just once you got behind the first gate, then there was just like a spaghetti of roads and new roads that were cut into the landscape and just creating spots for new grows.
It sounds like a lot of environmental destruction going on behind those gates.
There was a lot of environmental destruction. I mean, there's one area up there called the Iron Gate, and it's because it's got a big iron gate at the bottom and then several roads, only way to get in there throughout the top. And once you got in through the bottom and serving a lot of those search warrants, some of them areas we didn't have search warrants for, so we drove past gardens that were obvious. And then to get to these areas where most of the destruction was and those types of things, it was very kind of a sobering experience to get in there and then see the devastation that was to the land and just the total disregard for the environment. Several streams were completely dry from just the irrigation pipe. There were several 4-inch pipes going into those drainages that the whole creek system was in that pipe and being channeled elsewhere for the marijuana grows.
Leonard Mastin's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's the public safety chief for the Yurok tribe. We're talking about the raids a couple of weeks ago on the reservation that served 43 search warrants, involved 70 officers and 12 different agencies looking for illegal marijuana groves. And there were plenty there on Yurok lands. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange if you have questions or comments. 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Chief, how great had the impact gotten on just regular folks on the tribal lands?
Well, the regular folks were noticing a huge decline in water, and we have several schools up in those areas. The tribe has, like, Even Start, Head Start, smaller grade level for members that can attend different schools in those areas. And the whole tribe up in that area, there are no wells. So they're all dependent off of the surface water that comes off of those streams in those areas. And they several of them are channeled into a tank and then diverted, treated, and then diverted out through the community for housing projects and in the schools. And we had people that were going in there and at night and different times throughout the, well, mostly dark hours, but they were siphoning water out of the tanks, out of the creeks, out of the drainages around there that were built for in case there's a fire. There were pools built, those types of things for fighting wildland fires and those things in those areas. And, you know, they were being abused by people just coming down and filling up their portable tanks and then removing the water up to their source where they were cultivating the marijuana.
You know, I know you don't read minds, and I don't know how much you've had a chance to interview the people who were pulled in these raids, but, I mean, what were they thinking? Do you know? I mean, when you start taking enough water out of a creek that it runs dry, you must assume somebody will notice at some point.
that was our concern, and we couldn't really, you know, it was hard for us to believe that they would be doing that, and knowing that they're, you know, they drive by houses going up to those to their own place, and you know, to take all the water out of there, it was a huge undertaking for not only for our departments and the departments that were involved, but just your you know, I guess there's no neighborly love for, you know, the people that come from out of the area versus the ones that live there year round. And almost all of those grows in the upper parts, there were very few people that were year-round residents. Most of the places were just, they come and inhabit them and grow the marijuana during the summer, and then as soon as it's over, they lock the gates and go to places like, we had several license plates of Utah, Nevada, Illinois, Kentucky, Washington, several different areas we went to when serving the search warrants. Those people were from ultimately probably over 90% of them from out of the area.
And how many people, we talked about the 43 warrants, the 70 officers, the 12 agencies, how many people were arrested?
There wasn't basically anybody arrested because of the way the system works down here for marijuana and those types of things. You very seldom get any type of prosecution. So what we did was, when we first started, was we went after the environmental side, and we got a lot more help, we got a lot more assistance and cooperation from the local authorities in going after the environmental side versus just taking a marijuana case in there and try to get it prosecuted. So in the teams that we had Fish and Wildlife Service, Fish and Game, and the California Department of Forestry, who sent people that were just experts in the environment and the water. And when we went in and served search warrants, we had three teams, and on those three teams there was a team that was composed of just those people that went in, and they did nothing else but assess the environmental damage, write citations, and for the environmental damage and the siphoning of the water, and for the, you know, the degradation of the property that where they just dug huge swimming hole type holes, and then they would just line them with tarps and then siphon the water out of the drainages into those holding ponds, and then it was channeled elsewhere throughout the garden area.
So that being the case, I mean, were the teams empowered to remove any equipment or to order the filling in of any holes or anything like that?
We didn't fill in any holes, but the team went in there with the environmental people, and those landowners, and almost none of the landowners were on site. There was always just somebody there to run the pump, to make sure the gardens were irrigated, that type of stuff. We very seldom, almost none, found the landowners there. And on a couple of cases where the landowners were there, they all had devices that triggered when somebody breached the gate coming into the property. And almost every one of those, when we got down to the house, there were papers burning, you know, destruction of things that they had there. But and they were gone. The vehicles were there, but everybody was vacant there. We had cases where dogs and things were left in vehicles there, and you know, they vanished into the hillside, that type of thing. But they weren't there when we were there, and they heard us coming. And then once you got inside of the house, they had the property divided off into quadrants on a computer screen, and it actually showed where we came through the gates, and as we went through different parts of the property, they were alerted. And you know, they're pretty high tech in a lot of the things that they had there to protect themselves and the grow.
Leonard Mastit, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Yurok Public Safety Chief. We're talking about the raids on illegal pot grows on the Yurok Reservation on July 21st, which obviously involved a lot of people, 43 different search warrants, 70 officers from 12 agencies. You can join us at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Leonard Mastit.
Howdy. Two basic questions. You said you've driven past grow operations but didn't have a warrant. Isn't the fact that they're out there in plain sight apparently enough to give you probable cause to go in without a warrant? Secondly, in Humboldt there have been stories about armed resistance to people coming in around pot grows. Have you had any of that, or has it all been peaceful so far?
To answer your first one, we did find several others. The open field ones we dealt with and took care of, but there was others that were obviously covered, and a large portion of the ones we targeted were the outdoor type grows, where they had they were like 100 feet long, maybe 25 to 30 feet wide, and covered with white plastic. And there were three to four of those on each site that we went to. Those we had warrants for. Some of those we drove by and came back later with warrants to deal with some of those. But the open field ones we did take. We just cut those as we went along if we found others that were in the area of the places that we had the warrant. And almost every one of those places that we went to, the team that were following the water and those types of things ultimately always found hoses going somewhere else. And a lot of the areas that we targeted up there, there was a stream at the top that was the water was all basically removed and into tanks and pools and those types of things. And it was kind of a huge system of, like, buddies, I guess, our neighbors type of thing, because the water just kept coming downhill into tanks, and it ultimately watered their plants as it came down the hill, kind of a thing. So it had to have been like a huge cooperative effort from people that lived in certain areas that were along there. Not all of them were like that, but there was probably a good 10 of them that operated that way.
And then the other part of the question was the armed resistance, whether you encountered any.
No, we had several people that had called us throughout the year. And when early spring came around, and they were obviously hauling fertilizer and things up into those areas, and in the old, I say old days, but probably 3 or 4 years ago, when people were hauling fertilizer into those areas, you know, they always had it in a trailer or a truck, and then it was covered with a tarp, and, you know, you knew what it was, but at least they tried to cover it up. This year, we had dump trucks and trailers of dump trucks that were parked along the road, and they were hauling stuff in there by the dump truck load and dumping it, and then coming back and getting the trailer and taking it and dumping it. There was no more, you know, trying to hide anything. It was like wide open, and, you know, grow as much as you can, and if you get away with it, great. If you don't, you don't. But those people were reported to us by the locals from shooting. We had two or three different council people that live in that area, and they met with resistance from some Asian people that came in there to grow, and they were told not to come into those areas, you know, through intimidation and just shooting around almost every day and evening. They shot rounds and those types of things. But when we went in there, we didn't meet any resistance from the people that were shooting, and that was kind of the good thing about having the SWAT teams. And those areas that we knew were going to be possibly confrontational, we sent them first. And they were very efficient and very good at doing their job and securing the areas before anybody else ever got to come up and go in there. We had several of the gardens that they fell trees, pushed berms up in the roads and those types of things to keep us, and it did delay us on several occasions where we had to go get a backhoe to come in there to help remove the trees and those types of things just so we could gain access. But ultimately, it just slowed us down, but we were able to get into those areas.
So, Chief, do you feel like there will be a permanent impact here? I guess if they've been operating with impunity up until now, I mean, what's to stop the marijuana growers from just going, oh, well, cost of doing business, and then putting their operations back in place once the raids are over, and then pretty much daring you to do it all over again?
Yep, and we're already gearing up for next year. As operation, and you know, we did tell people in certain areas that that were there that we were going to be back, and we will be back, and we are working that up with the National Guard and the Humboldt County Drug Task Force that you know, we are going to make this a yearly thing until, you know, these people figure out that it's not okay to grow there, and it's not okay to take all the water and siphon it off. And this year we're really concerned, not just because of people's livelihoods and things like that, but we're possibly going to have a fish kill again this year in the Klamath River, and we're already
just for lack of water, you mean?
Yeah, for lack of water, lack of cool water. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of those streams are dependent; those fish are dependent on those for the cool influxes at different parts of the upper reservation, so that you know, they're able to rest and able to get that. Well, some of those streams were completely dry. I mean, after we dismantled some of the tanks and some of the pipes on those creeks were running. There was actually water heading down the hill where it's supposed to be and not being siphoned off and out into a field somewhere. And we had several of our environmental people that we got several pictures of the water. You know, not every system is all enclosed and running the way it's supposed to. There were several leaks, and water was draining out all over different places. So, you know, that was kind of sad to see. It was actually going back into the environment, but it wasn't in the creek and going downhill. It was just being soaked up and dissipating in areas that were right out in the middle of the sun.
So ultimately, Chief, did this end up being less of a law enforcement, you know, plant raid than it was more of a, like, you are using water rights you don't have raid?
It was a plant raid to start with, but once we got going and then we seeing the damage that it was causing in those creeks and those drainages, I mean, it turned into an effort to putting that water back into those drainages, and I think that's one of the things that we're going to be going back with National Guard probably in the next month is to go back in there and disassemble those areas that it would, obviously the water wasn't being used for household use. It was just being used for a garden, and we plan on going and removing those tanks and removing the hose and putting that water back into the creek system.
So did you end up with a big haul of pipes and hoses and things like that on this first round of raids?
We didn't get too much of that. We took generators, we took water pumps, we took anything affiliated with growing that crop and you know, things that were used to just manufacture that pot and that dope for those areas. We got a large quantity of those.
Whole bunch of raids back on July 21st on Yurok lands. Leonard Mastin is the public safety chief for the Yurok tribe. He's been our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Chief, thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Thank you.
And that'll do it for this segment of The Exchange. We will take a short break and return with the Writer's Almanac, followed by a discussion of this year's Daedalus Project at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Coming up.